And I believe it's in Article 3, Section 4. And I'm going to ask the School Board Association, Mr. Schneiderwind, perhaps to address us on it. And the issue had to do, what if a parent, where there's an all-day offering, would like to have the option of half-day, and then perhaps there would have to be that requirement that that option would be available for the parent that wants to have half-day. I think that's the spirit of it, and we said that we would at least put that out there for conferees to consider, and if Mr. Schneiderwind's available, I'd like him to address the impact as to what that would mean for school boards, because the whole program is optional for the district for all day K, but if you did have all day K with the language we had here, you'd have to have a half day option available. So if the MSBA is here to address. Okay. Well, I believe they'll be here shortly on that. But other than that, I wanted to point out those items. And well, welcome, Mr. Snyder. Perhaps you had the feedback as you were approaching regarding the amendment that we discussed on the Senate floor regarding the option for parents if, you know, could a school board provide a half-day option? Take it there. And it's in Article 3, Section 4 for members, and I'd like your testimony on that.
I'm sorry for the delay, Mr. Chair. My name is Kirk Schneider, and I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Board Association. I think the piece that we were the piece is the second part of that paragraph on the Senate side, what, 62.5, where it starts with the school district must have a policy to accommodate a parent that wants another option when the district only offers all day, every day. I think that would certainly create an additional requirement for districts. One, there's the policy development that you have with that piece. And secondly is the piece that if districts go into the all-day K proposal, they're going to go in that with their eyes wide open. They're going to look at the facilities, employment, how many teachers they need. And so to create a piece that says we must offer that may result in a parent requesting, two or three parents requesting a half-day program. And as a result, we would be required to offer that. And I think that would be a piece that doesn't fit for us. I think that just from the ground level, we've heard from many superintendents and board members who have gone down this path already with an all-day program. And they've had parents, especially with the first-time kindergartners, who say, you know, we want a half-day program. We want them closer. We don't think they're ready for a full-day program. And then by the end of the month, they want to go every day, all day with their friends, and if there's some hybrid model that they have. So I think that's the issue for us. I think the point that we need to accommodate a parent that wants this option would certainly require that piece for us. And I think that districts are moving in that direction, and I think most districts want to move in that direction based on the research and the achievement gains that students have had.
Questions, Mr. Schneiderwind? Okay, yeah. Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, and I apologize, Mr. Schneiderwind. I just want to make sure I understand. So so the MSBA perspective on this is that this is good language, that this is the kind of flexibility that districts should have?
No.
I didn't think so, but I want to make sure that that's very straightforwardly articulated.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, we would agree with that. Our assessment is that this would be a problematic, would be additional burden for us, for districts that are moving in the direction of an all-day program, and then to have one parent or two parents request a half-day program. Based on this language, that would require us to meet their requests. And if you only have two or three families who are requesting that, I mean, how do you manage that from a school district perspective? Hiring, space issues, it's just very challenging.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Further questions of Mr. Schneiderwin? Okay. And is there anyone else that would like to address the conference committee on all day K? Yes, Mr. Piccolo.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Eugene Piccolo, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. We also have a concern about that provision that was just addressed. Many of our schools only have one kindergarten classroom, and if they choose to make it full day, they would be required to create another kindergarten classroom, which would, for many of those schools would be a problem, especially in the rural areas.
Thank you. Additional comments from committee members? Yes, Representative Erdahl, I believe, maybe.
Yes, thank you, Senator Wiger. And just to echo a little bit, I mean, I have heard from rural school districts as well that are concerned about the space issue, that they don't have enough classrooms to accommodate the additional students. So just wanted to get on the record by stating that I had heard from schools on this issue.
Further comments from conferees? Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
A question maybe to you or someone. If we allowed, would a child be truant if they parents took them out of the school for at noon or brought them in at noon? Could that be accommodated?
It's my understanding they would not be truant. Actually, we put in a provision saying that if they're in that half-day program, but if they're in a full-day program and are expected to be there, that could raise an additional issue. I think if you're in a full-day program, you're expected to be there. But if legal counsel has a different interpretation, I would yield to that. Okay. Further comments or questions, Representative Mariani?
Mr. Chair, I don't intend for us to get into a long conversation here, but I have a question because the thought just sort of popped in my mind with the word truant. Is it the legislature's intent here for us to apply notions of truancy to kindergarten students the way we do them through the rest of our K-12 or first grade through 12th grade student? I mean, notions of truancy for me raises, you know, conjures up issues of, you know, involving in extreme cases, you know, local law enforcement, social service, et cetera. And again, this is probably a conversation, you know, at another point in the legislative process. But just for kind of quick clarification or understanding of what we're doing here, and perhaps legal counsel on both sides, both houses might help us with that.
Yeah, I believe they're conferring, and generally the truancy issue comes in play and. For teenagers, and where we have had most of the discussion, compulsory attendance doesn't start till age 7, and so we've made that very clear. But once you are in school, then it would come into play as to whether you are truant or not, and you know. But if there's any additional, you know, clarification that's needed, perhaps at an upcoming meeting, we could address that. So there, we can perhaps get additional clarification on the truancy issue if that's needed. If not, we're going to go next to early learning, mini minds, and each of us has proposals. We in the Senate, yes, Representative Mariani.
Thank you very much, Senator Wiger. And I guess before we move off the all-day kindergarten, I think it's important to note, too, that what we're talking about here, all-day kindergarten and early childhood education, are going to be the keys to closing that achievement gap. And one thing we know right now is there's about 10,000 students who are right now attending fee-based kindergarten. And by going to all-day, everyday kindergarten, that will save those 10,000 families about $26 million in fees, which is going to be very, very significant. And then just, I know there's been people that have asked, you know, what year does this start? And all the proposals, that our proposals have it starting in the fall of 2014. So just for a little clarification.
Thank you, Representative Markhart. And again, we share an excitement of making that happen. And if there's no further questions at this point, then we'll continue with the early learning.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson.
I'd like
Senator Johnson.
And Anne-Marie could comment on the truancy. In fact, I do believe they are truant. Mm-hmm. If they have an all-day program and are kept out without reason.
Provisions. Mr. Chair and members, under the compulsory attendance law, once a child is enrolled in a half-day or full-day kindergarten program or other kindergarten programs, they are required to receive instruction, and they are considered, would be considered truant if they're not receiving instruction and they've been enrolled. They can be withdrawn, but if they are enrolled, even if they're under the age of seven, would fall under the truancy.
Yes. And again, they have an option to withdraw. Ms. Noy. Senator Torres, right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for counsel, I understood, you know, in the provision we have, it says very specifically, if offered or an alternate day program without being truant. The language that we have specifically said without being truant. So do we have a conflict in there or?
Ms. Butler.
Mr. Chair, and so the language was that because they would be truant if we didn't have that language.
Oh, there you go.
That's okay. So now we're clear. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, again, this is voluntary. Compulsory attendance doesn't start until age seven. There's been, you know, suggestions that it might be before that, but we put in this language in response to a testimony that said if a person was in a half day, went through that option, that they would not be subject to that truancy, and that was to address that situation. Ms. Butler.
Mr. Chair, just to state a bit more accurately, compulsory instruction does start at age seven, but if you're enrolled in kindergarten before age seven, it starts before seven. It starts with enrollment in kindergarten if you choose.
If you choose, yeah. You're not required to be in kindergarten. We encourage it.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Torres, right.
But if you do enter, then you are required, and then if you take a child out or don't take the child, I think that's where I'm confused, because then there is a, once you are registered for kindergarten, then the law applies to you.
That's correct. Okay. We'll proceed to early learning, and the Senate has overall a total of $50 million for the biennium, the House $56 million, and the governor, I believe, had proposed $44 million. There are some differences in terms of language, but at this point I want to see if there's anyone that would like to offer testimony regarding the early learning program. Sure. Ms. Hilden?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and conferees. Nancy Hilden on behalf of Many Minds, and thank you so much for the opportunity. This is everyone is feeling that we're really poised to do something in a huge way to help get children ready for kindergarten, for that all-day kindergarten that you're discussing. So there are a few differences between the House and Senate language. I would put them in kind of a category of slightly more than technical, but not real controversial differences, and I'd like to just run through those, if I may. Mm-hmm. And Carol Miller from Hennepin County is with me and can answer any questions that come up. So, first of all, and I apologize, I'm looking at the April 29th dated article, so I think there has been a new April 30th dated. For some reason, there's some April 29th dated documents up there, and that's what I've been operating. So I'll just go by the line numbers. So first of all, looking at Article 8, both House and Senate versions in different ways tried to accommodate the concern about making sure that we keep data private that is collected both by providers and by the department in order to award scholarships. In discussion with both DHS and with MDE subsequent to this coming forward, it was decided that that's really a duplicative or redundant set of provisions, that there's really protection under MDE and DHS data privacy classifications already. And so the protection sections are really, we believe, not necessary. So just looking at lines 152.20 and 21 on the House side, that could be removed. And then there's a second section, 156. It's on the fifth page of my document. It should be close in yours. So lines 156.13 through 156.20 on the House side, and then that pairs up with lines 99.17 to 99.21. Again, these are all data privacy, data classification sets of provisions, and we believe they're not necessary. And then just moving through the different subdivisions, I think that might be the easiest way to walk through this. Looking at section...
Yes, Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm wondering about with the data issue, you know, obviously this was discussed quite extensively on the House floor, and I don't have expertise in this area, but I think it's because of the type of data being actually requested within the language that the consideration came up. And so I'm not totally comfortable simply saying we don't need that data language or additional data language without some conversation on our side, particularly with Representative Mary Liz Holberg, who is our data privacy expert and really wants to look out for the families and students here. And whatever the data provisions are under both departments, I think we'd have to have some clarification about exactly what they were before we could agree to removing these protections. I know that would be a concern on our side.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Brainerd. In fact, we, as I said, we've gone through the data that is being collected, and we've concluded that under MDE existing data privacy classifications, the data that is being collected and the class of the families and providers that would have any access under both DHS and MDE, that data is already classified. And I would say we've met with Matt Gehring, Tim Strom, Lisa Larson. There is one thing, and we'll get to this, where there is some subjective analysis made by the Office of Early Learning in how they determine the awards, and we've proposed in an amendment that I hope will be forthcoming to remove that, and that is a concern about just making a subjective decision based on a family's need when you would have to gather data and you don't know what that family's need really is or what you're asking for. And so we're striking that. We want it to be a clean test based on family income based on whether or not they're on a waiting list. So it's a very clean and easy test. You're not asking the family about other data that I think Representative Holberg would be concerned about.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, and perhaps you answered, or perhaps the last part is answering my question, but I want to make sure that we go over it carefully, because, you know, the language on 156.14 to 156.15 says including but not limited to, and that's the heartburn language. And so it seems to me that if all we're doing is collecting data that is consistent with whatever our data privacy laws say, can be requested and kept private, then we ought to be explicit, it seems to me, on that point, as opposed to language that says including but not limited to. That to me signals that there's something potentially much bigger than what is currently permitted, if you will, under our data privacy laws.
Mr. Chair.
And welcome, Representative Winkler.
Representative Marianne, that is one of the sections that we actually propose removing.
Okay.
And, Mr. Chair, to Representative Reinhart and Representative Mariani, with the deletion of that section, I did visit with Representative Holberg about that, and she said that allayed 95% of her concern, and she intended to communicate with the Department of Education about how they use MARS data in general. And so the only real information, new information that's being included here is the participant or whether the child is participating in the scholarships program. And so she was interested in learning more about, in general, how that data would be used in the child's future. And so it was kind of a broader question that she was going to address with the Department of Education. But her statement to me was it was 95% resolved by the removal of that section.
Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, you know, we've had previous conversations about the early scholarship program in terms of accountability language and what we would do with how we would assess success in terms of understanding whether we're preparing students for kindergarten and so forth. So I'd have to review the language again, but when how will we be doing that within the confines of the data privacy concerns in terms of getting any type of longitudinal data, you know, on this program in terms of understanding student achievement?
Mr. Chair, Representative Reinhart, I cannot discuss with knowledge and detail the mechanics of how it will be done. The amendment that Ms. Holden referred to does contain some report language in it, and it's my kind of broad brush understanding that the data already available to the Department of Education will allow them to do that assessment.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, in the amendment forthcoming, we hope, there's actually, and this is a very good question, because we need to make sure that we can take who we know is receiving a scholarship, obviously with data protections around who that is, but linking them to kindergarten readiness assessment. Otherwise, this is an exercise that is rather nice, but isn't going to get us what we want to know. And so there is express language, and thank you to Mr. Strom for helping work on that. We are tying when we're requiring that the MARS system does at least put categories in there so we know this kid has received a scholarship, for how long they've received it, and then their kindergarten readiness. That's private, of course, under already existing MARS data protections, but we will be able to, in aggregate, know how these children are doing based on having received a scholarship.
You do. Okay. Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that does alleviate some of my concerns. It sounds like you're working to address both ends of the issue in terms of data privacy protections, but meaningful data that will help us evaluate or hold the program accountable in terms of our goals of reducing the achievement gap. So thank you.
Members, I believe it will be an amendment we'll consider perhaps early next week as we look at adopting various portions, and we'll continue. You'll get input from Representative Holberg and other members of civil law stakeholders as needed. Okay.
And, Mr. Chair, if I may say, the good news is that the MARS data system is already in place, so this is not creating anything new. It already exists. So just really quickly then, moving through, it's Section 3 in the House bill, Section 2, in the Senate side language. And we're starting on the second page here. And we'll just walk quickly through each subdivision. I think that's the easiest way to proceed. So subdivision one, there's no differences in the House and Senate. Subdivision two, completely identical. Subdivision three, identical. Subdivision four, there's a comma difference between the House and Senate, which I think is probably just a drafting preference. It's on line 97.14 in the Senate side. And I leave it to discretion as to which is preferable. But more importantly, down on the House side in this subdivision 4 on lines 154.23 and 154.24, there's a very important clause. This is relating to teen parents. And these are the children, and actually it's a twofer. And we spent quite a bit of time talking with DHS, Department of Health, and early child advocates who are very concerned about that 0 to 2 age range. When you have a teen parent who's not getting their young child into care, then you have two kids at risk, basically. And so we want to make sure that we capture that teen parent who has a very young child, not a 3 or 4 year old, which most of this proposal is targeted at. So the clause on line, that I'm talking about is the notwithstanding other provisions in this section. What that allows is for the scholarship to be awarded to a parent who's a teen who has a very young child, a 0 to 2 year old, who can then use this for going to a quality program, quality rated program. So we would submit that that would be a good no other differences, adopting the House side language and then with that determination on the comma. In subdivision 5, we recommend adopting the Senate version. It breaks it down into a parent A and parent B. This is lines 97.2A to 98.5 on the Senate side. There's technical drafting improvement, I'll call it, under lines 97.33 and 97.34 that more closely specifies the sections we're referring to previously. Just a technical issue. But then the Senate brought something forward that the House did not take into account, and this is this average amount of scholarship. And this was important to Senate members. It came up in the dialogue that we had on the Senate side. And a lot of discussion about, you know, we want to get the best bang out of the dollar that's spent. If we put a hard cap in, there are many families that won't be able, and probably the highest risk families that won't be able to take advantage of the scholarship. But we want to make sure that we're not just, you know, you know, sun and the moon to one child and nothing for others. So the language in the Senate side, and this is 98.3 to 98.5, puts in place attempt to make this average scholarship out to $6,000 per child. That is actually still well under what some full day, every day early care is, but not every family needs full day, every day care. So we have done a lot of modeling around this, and this $6,000 average is what we believe will meet the needs of every child. So then moving to
Representative Markhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hilda, then also, if a child is receiving CCAP, child care assistance, this would go on top of that. I mean, let's say the total need is $8,000 and they'd be getting $3,000. Right. The grant would be for, scholarship would be for $5,000.
Right.
Or how would that work?
So we have someone here, Carol Miller, who can speak really in detail about this and who has some good anecdotes. But indeed, if you have a child who's getting some care in one place and there's additional opportunities to serve that child, you could overlay the different different funding streams.
Mr. Chair, my name is Carol Miller. I work for Hennepin County, and I have been working with the Mini Minds team. It might be helpful just to know that right now, under the Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge Grant, there are 4 communities throughout the state that are implementing scholarships that are very similar to what's proposed here. And what we have found with those scholarships so far to date is that, in fact, there are many families who have access to some support, child care assistance, that sort of thing, and are only needing a few thousand dollars to make up the difference because their program is their high-quality program is more expensive than the maximum of allowable under CCAP, or there are variations in their eligibility, and they just need a little bit more to fill in the blank. On the other hand, we have had families where they need their full cost covered, and that might be because the mother is mentally ill and is in treatment or something like that. And then the third kind of situation is children who are in school-based programs or Head Start, where they have a pretty much a set amount of money, and our hope and understanding going forward is that those programs, as they expand slots, would be covering the full cost of care, and that might range from $4,000 to $8,000. But you building on their infrastructure they already have available.
Thank you.
Thanks. Please proceed.
So then moving on to subdivision 6 of both bills, the award of scholarships. This, again, there will be some amendment language addressing part of this. So one thing that was raised was that we have to be careful not to be bringing in very subjective factors to use to determine who gets a scholarship. You don't, I think Lisa Larson wisely counseled that we just don't want to be saying, well, this family seems to be, according to me, more needy than this family. So we're proposing removing that. So under the House language, the language we'd recommend getting rid of would be the 155.5 to 155.6, the clause that says, and the needs of the child and that child's family. The similar language on the House side is just the and the needs of the child found on lines 98.9. So we would propose striking that. In addition, on the House side, Representative Loeffler, I believe, raised an interesting point, which was, you know, we've already got kids on waiting lists, so now we're going to create another waiting list, and how do the kids who are already on a waiting list line up? And so to accommodate that reasonable concern, in the House side, there's an extra clause not found in the Senate on 155.4 to 155.5 that adds a determining factor of whether the child's family is on a waiting list for a publicly funded program providing early education or child care services. And again, Carol can speak to the details of that, but there are existing waiting lists in every county for low-income children who need need support and families who need that. Moving down, so under this paren A of subdivision 6, with the stricken language we proposed, we would recommend adopting paren A. Parens B, C, and D are identical in both bills. And then again, on the Senate side, there was consideration after the House had taken up their bill of another issue, which was we want to know a little bit about where these scholarships are going, and are they all just flowing to the metro area? And so this will help us get a snapshot of that, this paren E, only found on the Senate side. The director shall report annually to the legislature on a summary of the geographic distribution of scholarships throughout the state. So we think that's a reasonable addition. Moving on to subdivision 7, there's not any difference. Subdivision 8, no difference. Subdivision 9, identical. Subdivision 10, identical. This subdivision at 11 is the section that we talked about earlier about removing that data. And then subdivision 12, same on both sides. We do have, we have recommended adding language that will come forward in the amendment that asks for an interim report in September of 2020. 14. So that we are starting to see some of this. We want to give the department enough time to have before we ask for a full report. But we do want to see this data. We want to see, are these scholarships getting kids ready? Are they getting kids ready year by year? And we think we have at least a starting basis to do that in 2014.
We strongly agree. It's important to see we're on track.
Yeah. And then the only other section that I'd point out to that's really tied to the non-money parts of the Mini Minds proposal is under, it's on lines, I'm flipping a couple of pages here, so you have to move back. It's for fiscal year, it's section, I don't know, I'm losing my, section 6 in the House bill, section 4 in the Senate. It's line 158.14, starting that on the House side, line 100.15. This was an accommodation for schools and Head Start programs, because what we have happening when we start to add a new program like this in, and this is what I'd make my case for why we need TAILS too, is if there's no certainty for schools and Head Start and school-based programs that they're going to have funding, they have no way when they're enrolling children to know that scholarship will be there. And so we need to be able to do something to accommodate that. So we've asked for an expedited process for this first fiscal year so that they can actually use the scholarships. It was one of the problems that we've had in this small $6 million implementation of the scholarship so far is that the schools could never, they didn't have the chance to use it necessarily because they were already enrolling kids in March and April, and then the scholarships were not available then. So this language in this section is essentially identical. I mean, there's no substantive difference. But what we're trying to get at is letting the schools and Head Start and other programs have access to funding in an expedited way, especially in that first year of the fiscal year where it's a problem. And again, if we only do this for one biennium, this will be a recurring problem. What we need is some stability in the knowledge that this funding stream will be there so that schools can gear up and be ready.
Thank you.
That's all I've got.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. And just a question of the testifiers. More cynical minds may claim or have claimed that the benefits of, say, all day, everyday kindergarten, early childhood have diminished by the third grade. And by third grade, it's not evident that there are great benefits from this early childhood education. I'd just like your thoughts on that. How would you answer that question?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, you called for a cynical mind, so I came up to the table. The best answer to that, I think, can be found in testimony from Rob Grunwald from the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Bank and from Art Rolnick, who were both here to testify in support of the bill in the K-12 committee in the House, and I'm sure in the Senate as well. But they have looked at the full range of studies and conclude differently than the small range of studies that have shown a fade-out effect. But their better argument, I think, is that one of the most important and long-lasting effects of early childhood education is the executive function development that develops among these children, benefits that last throughout their lifetimes and are not easily measured in third grade reading scores, but things that result over time in sort of the kind of soft skills that people need to be successful in the workplace and successful in life, avoiding the kind of downward spiral that a lot of people who come from very challenged childhoods can end up falling into. And so their testimony is far more informed than mine, but the gist of the testimony is that the fade-out effect by third grade is over-reported and is sort of beside the point, because some of the best benefits from early childhood and some of the best return on the investment from early childhood is the lifelong effects on executive function for for the people who participate in high-quality programs.
Senator Stump.
Thank you. I was just wondering, and I'm sorry I didn't get your last name.
Ms. Miller.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, my name is Carol Miller.
Miller, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Miller. Do we currently have programs available in all of the counties across the state, or is there just pilot projects out there right now?
Ms. Miller.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, this ultimately the scholarship program is tied to the issue of high quality, and Minnesota has decided that the way that we are measuring that over time is called the Parent Aware Quality Rating System. And currently that is under the auspices of the Department of Human Services, and they are rolling it out county by county over the next, I think we have two more years to go. However, in every county, in every community, there are programs that would be eligible because of the fact that Head Start programs and school-based programs have already met a pretty high bar and can easily be rated under the quality rating system. So essentially, yes, it is there would be the possibility of a family applying for a scholarship and identifying a high-quality program around the state. Additionally, what's allowed for in this bill is for providers who want to make a commitment to improving their quality. Parents may also take scholarships to those programs who are on the road to that rating, and in the first couple of years, that is allowed under careful monitoring. So that, in those counties, as Parent Aware is rolling out, but yet we don't yet have fully rated programs because it takes a number of months or a year for that to happen, there would be access as two programs that have committed to that rating.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just a follow-up. If we do have evidence of, you know, the Head Start in each of the counties, wouldn't we be able to look at where the money goes and find out if there's some geographic spread on the program? I mean, already? I would think that, you know, it'd be easy to trace the dollars as to where the dollars go.
Ms. Miller?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, I do believe, well, I'm certain that the Department of Education already knows where children are enrolled in Head Start, where children are enrolled in school-based programs, and how much of the money that's already allocated in the state budget is going to those different parts of the state. Likewise, with child care assistance, that would be another place where money would be identified.
Senator Stump?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, my question arises from that paragraph where we were talking about geographic a report relating to geographic data, and I'm not sure where. I think it was
98.31.
We should have some idea of, you know, what the where the dollars are going currently, and you know, it's definitely important, and when we talk about programs that are statewide, obviously, but I would think there'd be some information available currently on that too.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, if I understand this, reflecting on this clause, I think the idea is, yes, there is information about resources that are already available, but what we know is that they are not sufficient for all of the low-income children who could benefit from a high-quality program. So what this would do is assure that the director and the of the Office of Early Learning and the department is reporting on these new scholarships, which involve parent choice around the state where parents are choosing them geographically, is that, and that gives you indications of two things. One, are they being fairly distributed? And the other is, are there resources appropriately available in terms of both high-quality programs and the scholarship itself in a fair geographic distribution?
Okay, thank you. We have time for one more question from Representative Breinert. Then we need to recess for about 15 minutes. The Senate needs to be together for its annual photo, and then we'll return. So, Representative,
they can Photoshop you.
It might look better. Okay. Representative Breinert.
Mr. Chair, actually not a question, but a follow-up to Senator Stumpf's line of questioning. And as I perceive the importance of looking at the geographic distribution, it's something we won't know until we see how the rollout of the Parent Aware program, and it's really the onus is on Parent Aware in terms of how the information we've gathered from the pilots, and we have really some great information from the pilot sites, and I happen to be in a district that was part of the pilot, so I'm pretty aware of how that's proceeded. But the rollout of that information to other districts will determine whether indeed we're successful in terms of geographic distribution. So we won't know until the program is rolled out further.
Representative Winkler, 30 seconds.
I can do less. Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, it's also important to remember that the four pilot sites that link scholarships with Parent Aware are in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and the other two are Itasca County and the White Earth Reservation. So in testing this out, great care has been taken to make sure that it works in greater Minnesota, particularly rural and very poor areas of the state.
Okay. Members will recess for approximately 15 minutes. Well, the E-12 Conference Committee will be called to order. We're just returning from recess, and we plan to go for about an hour and a half or two for those of you checking, and we'll do our best to get those remaining items done, and we'll recess again at that point and see where we're at in our respective schedules for floor sessions. We have heard from the Minnie Mines representatives, as well as the chief author for the House, Representative Winkler. It's noted that there's various amendments that'll be suggested, and that'll be reviewed over the next few days, those implications. I would like to see if there is anyone else that would like to testify on early learning, Minnie Mines in general. Yes, from the department. Ms. Hermans and
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rose Hermanson, Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Education. I'm joined here by Kevin McHenry, and we'll have Lisa Barnage join us to answer more of the technical questions. I'm here to kind of state the position of the department and the governor on this proposal. It was 2 years ago in conference committee when we had the state shut down that I had my first experience. I was in the room when this program was approved, and I just want to, for the record, state the governor's and the commissioner's commitment to this program. At a very difficult budget time, they demanded that $2 million be put on the table for this, and also that we have stronger tails of $3 million to start this program into existence. During this his budgeting of this year, the governor added another $22 million to this program. We have a strong commitment to this this program, and the commission and the governor feel very committed to it. However, having said that, the department supports the governor's proposal in the language as he introduced it. And we did share a copy of that with one of the
members, I believe it's
being handed out.
Handed out, okay.
Let me just kind of make some general statements and then maybe address some specifics as best I can on behalf of the commissioner. This is a very new program, and the agency would like to see as much flexibility until we have a better track record. And as we go forward with developing policies and processes that truly meet the needs of our kids their families and a wide array of early childhood programs. We want to make sure they work well together. We think the commissioner should be administering this program. She just recently appointed a new director. Listening to this discussion that was going on earlier, there are many unanswered questions. And I think as we go forward, the greater flexibility we provide, it allows us to operationalize this program in a way that maximizes the resources, is the most efficient, and gets the services to the kids throughout the state. And that's one of our commitments. In the governor's proposal, we in our practice, in our plan, is to have 55% be allotted at Metro, 45% at Greater Minnesota. We need to be able to have the flexibilities to make this happen. The definition, we have, first of all, that we feel the commissioner should be administering the program. I think there's a difference there. There are some definitions that expand the current definition of eligible programs and provide some decoupling with the quality program. We think there's some concerns there. You know, we also have our Race to the Top application, which we went out and sought in order to support early learning programs. And so, again, that commitment is there. We just want to be able to make sure that as we look at this long term and we put this amount of resources into it, that we are doing it appropriately and doing it right. There is some expansion in this proposal to under the age of three. Our experience has been that when you start expanding it to younger ages, the program becomes more expensive. We feel that we do need to have some very specific maximum on the scholarships. I think we've all had experience. If you allow too much flexibility, the cost of the program is going to rise to what you put out there. And in order for us to have the programs available in as wide an area as possible and to as many kids as possible, we do not want certain programs using up more of the resources. So we think that's an important factor that we need to look at.
And Ms. Hermanson, excuse me, mm-hmm. You would cap it up to 4,000?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Okay. We would be open to looking at some issues like the sibling issue and the teen parent issue, but I think we have to look at that very carefully, primarily because of cost containment and also the availability and making sure that those services are used appropriately. There is concerns about the dollars being used to supplant. We need to be monitoring that. We want this as a supplement, something to go over and beyond. And again, I think one of the main things is as this program expands, we need to have as much flexibility as possible in order to make sure that we meet all these new challenges. I heard this morning you were trying to address some of those challenges. And as we go into more full implementation, the commissioner feels strongly about having flexibility to address it. Some of the things in how it interacts with other parts of our agency, I mean, we talked about how we're going to find out information about kids. Is it going to be program evaluation? Are we going to be tracking individual kids? What does this mean for data privacy? Do we need to assign these kids MARS numbers? There's a whole bunch of questions here that I don't think we've had enough time to figure out an answer. But if we really, and I do agree, and the commissioner does agree, we want good information about the impact and how this program is working and supporting our youngest learners. But we need to do that in a comprehensive way with all of our other programs with children and supporting, because these children will then progress into our all-day K program, which the governor is very supportive of, and then into our education program. So there's just a variety of things here that we think we need the flexibility for. We also do think we should do an outside clear evaluation of the impact and figure out what we are getting for our investment. With that, I don't know if Mr. McHenry has anything to add. But that's kind of the big picture view from the commissioner and how we see this program operating.
Representative Marquardt and then Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hermanson, you're talking about that you want all this flexibility, and yet you sound pretty steadfast on the $4,000 as a cap. And you know, a lot of the testimony has been that the market rates in some of the areas are up to $8,000 or more, and actually maybe more for the child that needs it the most. And I know the concern with setting it at $4,000 may literally not make this program workable. So why not some flexibility? I mean, the Senate has language of $6,000 in an average. The House doesn't have a cap. Why? I mean, how set are you at $4,000 there as a cap?
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Marcotte, you know, the governor has always said if you can find something that makes it better, he's willing to look at it. But I also think we're concerned about, we've heard about the possibility of these programs in greater Minnesota and other areas. The use of resources will become very important as this program, people become more and more aware of it, and we have more and more programs that qualify. We want to have the breadth of the program, have the resources available to help with the breadth of this program before we start spending too much on the depth or the cost per student. And maybe Mr. McHenry would like to add something.
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. Just a couple more points to add to Assistant Commissioner Hermanson on the cap of $4,000. I think one of the concerns that we have looking at this is that we want to make, as she mentioned, we want to make sure this program works as effectively as possible. What we've seen already and under the first implementation, there's been some unforeseen circumstances that have arisen, and we've had to make some adjustments to make sure that we could target that make sure the scholarships get out, they get out statewide, and they get out to the appropriate children. With this rapid expansion, we want to make sure that as we are expanding, that we do have the ability to make specific adjustments based on the information that we're getting in real time. If we start putting together kind of guesstimates on how this program will expand and have very, very rigid language, we could encounter some more problems. One of the issues with the $4,000 or not having a cap or having a rolling cap or an adjusted cap is that we still don't have anything in place for the cost containment. Even if you use an average, whether it's in the metro area or greater Minnesota, there's nothing to say that, okay, now we're getting, there's some additional funds coming through scholarships. There's nothing to keep that program kind of in a cost containment area. Further, as you expand this to 0 to 3-year-olds, that cost of early child care or early education is going to be significantly higher than the 4- and 5-year-olds. So that's going to potentially increase where the cap is going. So I think what we want to see is we think a good start is at $4,000. And as this program is growing, that if we have a good overview or some good recommendations or some good oversight of how this program is working, that's something that we can look at is, do we have the proper cap amount? Are we targeting the right children? Are the 0 to 3-year-olds for siblings or for the teen parent, how many of those kids are we getting to? So I think that's something that we're going to learn, especially if we have a quality evaluation on that.
Mr. Chair, I guess.
Yes. Representative Marquardt.
Well, I appreciate that. And I know there's a part in here where you said the commissioner must consider geographic distribution. And Ms. Hermanson, you mentioned 55% to the metro and 45% to the rural. And I don't know if that's not here. I don't know if that you're talking about something with the. But my point here, and believe me, coming from rural Minnesota, I want to make sure this is accessible. But our number one goal here is to close the achievement gap. And if we find out that the greatest achievement gap is 62 metro to 38 rural, I want it 62-38. I don't want just dollars going out because we have to meet. Again, it seems to be opposite of flexibility. If you're going to set something like that, we need to go where the need is best. And I guess, who would determine this 55 to 45? Are you going to actually look at where the achievement gap and where we have kids that need the most help?
Mr. Chair, members, I think the issue on this, when you go back to the need, the $2 million targets 1% of the eligible population throughout the entire state. And so the expansion, whether it's $22 million, whether it's $50 million, whether it's $75 million, we're still not going to be able to address the entire need across the state. So there's need in the urban core, there's need in the suburbs, there's need in the exurbs and greater Minnesota. I think one of the things that happens of why we want to make sure we target this is that you could take the money right here and put it into one specific city. You could put it into one specific area, and you may not reach the entire targeted population. And when you start delivering a service like this, sometimes it is easier to have one small area and hit as many people as possible. But since this is a statewide program, we want to ensure that this is going statewide.
And Mr. Chair, this, I said this was in our plan. Part of it is we can adjust in the planning, but if we, that's part of the request for flexibility. We may make those adjustments, but I think our commitment is to make sure that this is available as much as possible throughout the state.
Just one final comment, if I could.
Yes, Representative Marker.
And I appreciate that. And I hear you talking about flexibility, and then at sometimes you're talking about being more specific. And, you know, this is a new program. I mean, you've had the pilots. You know, we're going to ramp this up quite a bit. So, I mean, I think we're going to – you wouldn't want to put too much specifics into the statute. We need to keep that as broad as we can, and that's, you know, and I know in the current bills in both of ours, they have to look at geographical distribution just like here. And so I guess I would rather than have something set on all of these. We need to have the flexibility to see how this works, but I understand what you're saying.
And Mr. Chair, members, that's why I started out with the statement of our strong commitment to this working. We just want this. Now you're back here a lot of times fixing things, and I guess we would like to start with more flexibility and then bring this stuff to you as we move forward and share with you the information. That's why we're supporting a strong evaluation component that helps us look at what our needs are.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do share Representative Markworth's concerns. We've had the pilots for 6 years, members. We've received $45 million from the feds. We've been talking about this issue. I believe I've been in this country for 26 years, and I've been talking about it for 26 years. So to come in here and say we need more flexibility and more time to figure out how this is going to work, to me, is incredibly frustrating. What we should have right now is a map that tells us who these kids are. I think that you can put together very simply a map that says, you know, this is where, based on the legislation, this is where the kids live. These are the many children that are eligible. This is what the cost in greater Minnesota is. This is the cost in urban. This is the cost in suburban. Technically, we have these many children who are eligible, and technically this is the amount of money you receive. This is planning. That is what planning is, and that's what we need from you. So to throw out numbers, you know, we need flexibility, 4,000, 6,000. By now, you should tell us exactly how much money we should be putting into, because you should know exactly how many families are eligible. And we should have a projection of how many families are going to apply so that we can begin to plan our next year for the tails. We should know that. And so for me, you know, I appreciate the support of the department, and I appreciate that you're committed to that. You have said time and time again you're committed to this. But I think this is a simple equation where you put numbers together and you let us know, and I think we've known that. We received $45 million to work on this issue from the federal government to really figure out, you know, how this works. So I'm very confused about, you know, where the $4,000 actually work and why. We have not received that information.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we, after the last budget cycle, was when we received the Race to the Top dollars. So it's been less than 2 years. This is some of our concern about proceeding somewhat more cautiously as we roll this out. The Race to the Top dollars, the application and the announcement that we received those dollars were after we actually implemented some of this program ourselves here in the state. we do want to get that information. We've got this involvement with Head Start and some other programs, and so how we identify kids and who's eligible, and how we do that I don't hate the word tracking, but finding out where everybody is part of the need that we have to get good information back down in data. And so we are in this process of development right now.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. And just in response, obviously $4,000 gets out to more families than $6,000 does. But my concern is that if it doesn't help us adequately reach our goals, then it's a waste of money. Now, I don't know what the right amount is, but that's why I endorse the principle of flexibility that's been expounded here today and urge you to do that.
Thank you.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Hermanson, you mentioned the relationship with the race to the top. Could you expand a little bit more on exactly how that relationship is kind of tied together with the program that we're talking about?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to have Lisa Barnage help me on this. I haven't been, I've been running a lot of task force, but this is one I've been a little bit less involved with, so I'd like her to maybe answer more of the detailed questions for you on how these interrelate with each other.
Ms. Barnage.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lisa Barnage, and I'm with the Minnesota Department of Education. And I apologize, Senator Stump, could you repeat your question?
Ms. Hermanson mentioned the connection that this program had with Race to the Top, which is a program that the department was successful in getting. And I was just wanted to know if you could expand a little bit more on that relationship, and then I have a comment or follow-up comment.
Sure. Thank you. I'm sorry, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Senator Stump. The Race to the Top was a grant that we received from the feds last December of 2012, and it is a $45 million grant, of which $10 million is being used for early learning scholarships in four transformation zones, which include the Northside Achievement Zone in Minneapolis, the St. Paul Promise Neighborhood, Itasca County, as well as the White Earth Tribal Nation. In the Race to the Top application, the early learning scholarships have very little requirements, and so part of that was the fact that we wanted to work with the communities to allow them to determine what their needs were. In that about this time last year, we were working diligently with communities to determine how they would set up the scholarship programs in their communities. We did roll out those scholarship programs in November, about the same time that the current state scholarships were rolled out. The scholarships, as I know of to date, in each of the communities, the Northside Achievement Zone and St. Paul Promise Neighborhood, do have a focus on 3- and 4-star rated programs and parent-aware, as well as 3- and 4-year-olds, although they do allow for siblings. In Itasca County and in the White Earth Tribal Nation, they do allow for all age range children up to kindergarten, as well as all eligible programs that have signed a participation agreement in the parent-aware system. The dollar amounts actually in all four transformation zones are approximately $13,000, but they are tiered depending upon, I believe, the age of the child, as well as the type of program and the quality of the program.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, one of the things we did find out, and this again is talks to our need to have more rich information, is in the Northside Achievement Zone, nearly half of the scholarships went to the 0 to 3 age group. And so there are just some information and detail things that we are still finding out that we find will be very helpful in instructing us on how to develop this program.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one of the things that has kind of been my experience over the years is that trying to change educational policy or develop new formats is much slower than turning a battleship around. It's a pretty involved process because there's so many people that are involved, and sometimes cultures, and sometimes individual districts. Just, you know, you're dealing with so many people, and I had apprehensions when the department won that race to the top, and we're going to assume the responsibility of demonstrating that Minnesota was going to have a plan to change something very make a very important change in the education and reducing that learning gap. The one thought I shared with the commissioner at that time was the same thing I'm sharing with the committee members, is that you're going to have a difficult time to meet that challenge in that time frame because of that immense job of changing how people live and learn and do things differently. And so in about a week and a couple days, we're going to adjourn and go home, and all of us are going to leave. I hope. Me too. And we walk away from here, and we're going to end up going home, going back to our business, and we're going to talk about the wonderful things we did, hopefully, and we're going to think in the back of our minds, well, we did this, we did that, but leaving it up to somebody else to carry out. And so I think that it would be to the benefit of all of us and to the state to get this done, to be sure that we don't fail on the race to the top or this program. And I know it's tough for legislators to put the responsibility into somebody else's hands when we think that we can run it ourselves, but we're not going to. We're not going to be making the decisions once we leave. And so I would side on the or fall on the side of giving as much responsibility to if we have the confidence in the department to give them the responsibility, and then when we come back ask for the information to demonstrate what they did and how successful they were.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hermanson, I'm just wondering if you could give a thumbnail about why you want to keep authority with the commissioner rather than the Office of Early Learning.
Mr. Chair, Representative Briner, I mentioned about the interrelatedness of all these early learning programs, and what I think I see in the bill, at least, is we have a director sitting somewhat outside the department and reporting to two commissioners. We've had a history of being supportive of this within the Department of Education. We are going to have the elements that need to be considered as we roll this out are elements within the department that the commissioner then has to coordinate services and address issues around. And so we just feel that it's more appropriate for the Commissioner of Education to be in charge of this program. And you've even asked for data around kids. I mean, somehow we're going to have to figure that out. And it's not going to be necessarily just the early learning section that's going to do it. We're going to be working. We do this. We have a charter center. We have other centers. They operate programs and stuff, but it's across agency. And one of the things we are trying to do in agency is have everybody involved with promotion, support, and help with the development of the program. And so we just think it's more appropriate there.
Mr. Chair.
So Representative Briner.
I don't think we'll resolve this here, but this seems like a really critical difference in terms of the vision of management of this program, and it concerns me that at least from my perspective, we're only really engaging it now, and maybe we try to engage it at other points. However, maybe we should hear from the Office of Early Learning about their perspective on what that connection is, but it seems like you are creating, from your perspective, there's some bureaucratic elements that'll come in here that might interfere with the free flow of information and development of the program. Is that what you're saying?
Ms. Hermes.
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Ryan, I'm more talking about the collaborative nature of making this program successful and working across. I mean, we're working with families with kids that are not only going to be in this program, but they're going to be in K-12 program. We want the collaboration within the department and agency, and what we've done within the agency is to try to be collaborative across different things that are going on. We're going to have some of this related to charters and others. We need to have that interrelatedness of programs, and that's why we feel it should be under the commissioner and the agency. And it's more of a collaborative. Our main goal here is to make this as effective as possible for kids. And which, by doing that, our goal obviously is closing the gap. But we want to not do this in isolation, but we want to do it as a whole.
I'd like Ms. Hilden to perhaps give a response. I know she's very anxious to do that. And we will stay on this for about 10 minutes. Obviously, we're going to be giving a lot more discussion on this early next week. So, Ms. Hilden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was quickly trying to jot down some of these things, which are kind of comments that are relatively new, which is a little surprising, and given that there's a week to go in the session. But let's just walk through some of these things. And I would just encourage everybody, number one, that you are dealing with words, and the words and what the words say are really important. It's not what I'm thinking, it's what it really says. What this bill really says in the language that we have put together, let me just start out. There is no separate entity, Office of Early Learning. It is fully contained, and there's nothing that changes that. It is fully contained with the Minnesota Department of Education. So I really am confused by some suggestion that it's somewhere outside. Now, there have been, as Senator Torres-Rae has proposed or been involved with, proposals that do take and create a separate Office of Early Learning on par with the Office of Higher Education, because it does require intense collaboration with a span of programs, state programs that run from age zero and even prenatal up through age five. We have DHS involved. We have Department of Health involved. If we're going to just, but that's a discussion very much for another day. So, but understand the words in this language. This is the Department of Education. So that's what the Office of Early Learning is currently established in. We make no change to that. I wanted to comment about flexibility. What I would be remiss if I did not repeat is something that Mary Kozak said in testimony. She's from the Blandin Foundation and was very integrally involved with the Itasca County expansion. And they have touched every low-income child in the entire county. So actually, we only have 86 counties left to go because of what they're doing up there. Mary Kozak said, the thing we don't have right now to getting this done across the state is money. We know how to do it. We know what the need is. We have the waiting list. We can spot the children. What we don't have is the money to do it. And from every organization that has been involved across the state, that's the message that we're getting. We know how to do this. Sarah Carlson from the Initiative Fund down in Wilmer. What they need is the money to get this. And I would say even that the rural areas of the state and the organizations that are set up already are even maybe more flexible and able to put this money to work right away, just get it out the door. So flexibility, top priority. I'm not sure about expanding or decoupling what that is. We do make accommodation to allow for providers to expand out, but I don't see decoupling in here. I'm happy to work, and I will work with Mr. McHenry and Ms. Hermanson on figuring out what that actually means, and we'll talk about that further. The cap, We've been modeling this with the Federal Reserve in the state of Minnesota for 6 years now. We know what it costs. The cap doesn't work. The cap isn't going to help all the kids that need this. So it's nice, because what a cap does is it allows public officials to say, with this amount of money, we can serve this many kids. But the flexibility that you need might draw that down a bit, but we need the flexibility. We're being careful. We're telling the department to be careful with how they use these dollars. Keep it at an average. We know what that average is. It's $6,000. Earlier ages, more expensive. Absolutely. We know this. It's harder and more expensive to take care of a 0 to 2-year-olds. There's need there. We've heard about the brain development that happens starting even prenatally. The MDE, that's not in their wheelhouse right now, is it? MDE is focused on K-12 and some early ed. The agencies and programs that have been focused on 0 to 2 are in DHS and Department of Health. So we do have to focus on this entire span of children. We're being very careful, because we do want 3- and 4-year-olds to be the start. That's where we're going to get the quickest results that show that these children are kindergarten ready. But the only allowance that we're giving in this language is that it says if a child is 3 or 4 and they have a younger sibling, and this is to keep their family sane in the mornings, that if there's a quality program, they can drop their 3- and 4-year-old off, and also that younger child, if there's a quality program that's available. That makes sense, and it does reach down into those younger age groups, but that's a sensible way to start reaching down. Teen parenting. This was the first thing that we heard when we talked to DHS about the concerns here. The teen parenting, I've already talked about it. I'm not going to go further into it. It's a twofer. Supplant versus supplement. Very interesting discussion. To accommodate school-based programs, we made very clear, and there's one sentence, I'll happy to point it out to you if you want me to make sure that those school districts that have been willing to levy to raise money to use for early education, pre-K, they're not going to be subsequently penalized if that levy goes away. So is that supplanting, or are we just saying we're giving flexibility and we're not going to punish school districts that have already done something? And then peer evaluation, maybe Carol can talk to this, but Parent Aware has been an outside private evaluator of this for years. We know what this is doing. This is something that we know how it's working. We know what it does. We got to get the money out the door. So thank you.
Representative Brudel.
Thank you, Senator. And just one question. The Office of Early Learning seems best suited to manage programs. Might there be some sense in having a more autonomy given to the office and the director?
I represent an organization. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I represent an organization of philanthropic entities around the state. They have been a strong supporter of that separate policy discussion, because they do feel that, and this maybe is partly about culture of existing agencies. It's not, and it's about what makes sense for this age group of children. And they are strongly supportive of examining how we might construct something that focuses on this 0 to 5 age group, certainly in collaboration with all other agencies that are involved. But from my organization, absolutely yes, we should be exploring how to do that, and again, put this on par with the Office of Higher Education.
Members, we have a state statute that says ready for K by 2020. We all agree we need to close the achievement gap. We have accountability expectations. In fact, you list many in the House proposal for expectations. We have an accountability model that goes to the Department of Education and through the Centers of Excellence. We have some difference as to how we get there. It's been expressed.
But we need to resolve that, and we'll have continued discussions on this next week, or possibly this weekend. But I would urge the parties to continue. It's clear that the department, through Race to the Top and other expectations that we have, would work very closely through existing model. But the bottom line is we want to do what's in the students' best interests, and that gets us to the goal of Ready for K. So, Representative Marker.
Thank you very much, Senator Wieger. And I guess I want to echo a lot of what you just said, is that the early learning scholarships is a top priority for the governor, the House, and the Senate. We're all on board here. And we also know that it is this effort that will have more to do than anything else with closing the achievement gap, so we have to get it right. There's 10 days left of this session, and I'm a little concerned that I'm hearing some differences here. We need to iron those out. We just have to get, because we've got to make sure this program works. It's a top priority for everyone. We know this is what's really going to make the difference in the long term. So, Senator Wieger, I agree. We need to, powers to be need to get together and kind of work some of these things out. But thank you for all your efforts.
Senator Stump's going to offer a comment, and then we're going to go to testing. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we don't want to dwell too long on this, but I have a question for Ms. Larson.
Ms. Larson. She is.
Ms. Larson, do you remember a number of years ago when we were trying to bring greater collaboration and coordination in a similar issue? Maybe it was the same issue, related to trying to figure out how we could get the Department of Education, Health, and Human Services to work together. Is it possible that you could dust off those old laws and wheel them back in here?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes, I'll certainly try.
Mr. Chairman, we actually had, I think it was Senator Johnson that was the author of it. It wasn't called the Department of Education. It was called the Department of Children, Family, and Learning, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Thank you. That's well noted. We're going to go next to testing, assessment. We've had a great deal of discussion. The overview, there's a lot of similarity in our proposals. Particularly, we appreciate the work that has been done by Representative Breinart and Senator Dahl, the commission work through the Commissioner of Education's task force. And I'll ask Senator Dahl and Representative Breinart just to update us on ongoing discussions, and perhaps we're looking at a proposal on paper that we can look at as early as Monday. So, Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. Let me just provide a little context for how this bill came about. And start of the session, Senator Torres Ray, Chair of the Education Policy Committee, kind of divided up the membership on our committee into four areas, and one of those areas was assessments. And she asked me to kind of spearhead the efforts on in the assessment changes that we might want to look at. And in one of those exciting policy committee meetings, I was reading, there was a reference to the working assessment group, the assessment working group. And so I actually downloaded that document and read it in another policy committee meeting. And I realized that much of the work had already been done. If you look at the persons who were on that particular assessment working group, there was about 37 folks. Many of you are in the room right now, but it was like a who's who of education experts here in the state. There were testing experts, there were principals, there were superintendents, representatives from the School Boards Association, the principals, there were math teachers, Education Minnesota, the Chamber, the Business Partnership, legislators, really a good cross-section of good folks. It was chaired by Matt Mose and Fred Nolan.
And they had a series of recommendations in that. And then I looked at that, and I saw Representative Breinert's name on there, and I said, hey, I'm in charge of assessments over here, at least for this session, and what's your plan going forward? Do you plan to introduce any legislation? And so we had a series of meetings, and that's how the bill came about. It really was taking a look at the recommendations of the task force and putting them into bill form. So a lot of good work was done this past year on that, and of course the work continued here this session. And quite simply, what the bill does is beginning in 2013-14, require school districts to assist all students to explore college and career interests and develop a transition plan from post-secondary education or employment, and that transition, making sure that our students are indeed ready, college ready, or career ready. The bill, not without some controversy, because it does eliminate the grad tests, it does eliminate high stakes testing for Minnesota, but it does replace it with a series of what we consider much smarter testing. Instead of the fatalistic approach of a cut score where we see people dropping out of school, where we see people, a grad test that colleges don't even accept, we feel that the suite of assessments that's in our bill, with starting with the 8th grade Explorer plan, the 10th grade plan test, and the ACT would be the suite of assessments, we feel that we have a much forward-looking testing system, which with the 8th and 10th grade testing, we can get earlier remediation and diagnostics to the students in order for them to eventually see where they might be headed in terms of career or college readiness. So instead of that fatalistic approach of a cut score, we have this forward-looking suite of assessments where we can find out much earlier if students are ready or if they need remediation. It does streamline testing because there's no retests required. We also have a career interest inventory that would be taken in 9th grade. We have a reporting system to make sure that districts and we as legislators know how students are doing on these particular tests. And we also, this fits very well with the four-point plan that the Commissioner of Education, Brenda Caselius, the Governor, Dayton, Commissioner of Higher Education, Larry Pogemiller, and the Chancellor of Minsky, Chancellor Rosenstone, their four-point plan, our legislation here that we're that's in this bill, fits really nicely with what their proposal is. So we believe we have good support from the commissioner, and who has weighed in, and the department has weighed in, and we've kind of ironed out any of the differences between the House version and the Senate version, and we actually, I believe, at some point, perhaps Monday, we can be ready with that amendment that would really tighten up any loose ends that we have in the legislation. So a lot of work has been done with the good staff, of course, and the House in terms of ironing out any differences that we might have, and we think that we are really almost there. So it was a pleasure to work on this bill with Representative Breinert and all the folks that helped us over this particular session. So with that, I'll let Representative Breinert offer her 2 cents, and then I think at some point we might have the department talk about what those fine-tuning amendments might look like.
Thank you, Senator Dahl. Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Dahl. You've done an excellent job of summarizing the work, and I won't dwell on that too much except to say that for many of us, I think this is really a fundamental sea change that I think has been coming in a lot of forms for a number of years, and I think the pivotal point is to understand assessment as a tool and not an end in itself. The test isn't the goal. The test is a tool that helps us direct and shape students' futures. And I think if I had to crystallize the entire cut score discussion, I think it's around that issue that the real argument lies. A cut score creates assessment as an end in itself. You have to get over that bar to make the next steps, whereas a vision of assessment as a tool, the goal is no longer a score on the assessment. The assessment helps shape the student's goals and objectives, aligns the student's aspirations with their skills in a way that moves them toward a career or college or both in a way that is more integrated and brings the family and the school together in the planning process so that there's ownership of that plan through the education. And the other piece that Senator Dahl didn't mention that was also one of the later recommendations of the accountability work group is what we're doing 3-7 with the computer adaptive assessment both on and off grade. That will integrally align, you know, our 3-12 system so that when we're looking at students' trajectory towards success, we can be understanding how it is, again, their skills and ambitions align. At third grade, their ambitions and goals might be more amorphous. But when we do, the benefit of doing both on and off grade testing is we'll have a fuller, richer picture through that score of where that student's abilities are. So I think it's a very promising system, and we are our language is very close, and most the Senate did an amendment that involved some technical pieces on the floor when they heard the bill, and so when you're looking at differences that might relate to years, the language in the Senate is more accurate. We worked very closely with the department in terms of the implications of how to identify what groups were eligible for what testing at what point and what overlap there had to be between current requirements, transitional requirements, and then the new system. So that language is all worked out, and it'll be in our, you'll see it in the amendment, but the Senate language most closely aligns with that right now. But there are a couple of pieces, one in particular that we wanted to invite public testimony from the department on, because within the House language, we still have the ASFAB, it's the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude yep. Battery, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that was proposed in an amendment at one point in the House and as an alternative for whatever the anchor assessment would be at 11th and 12th grade. I think was totally well-intended in terms of offering an option for students with a different set of interests, including going into the military. So we've worked with the department to explore whether that indeed that exam could serve in a comparable manner as an anchor for accountability. And I know that the department has been in conversation with the federal government and the Army about this, and I think we could invite them to testify in that regard. And then there's maybe one other issue about the positioning of the 11th and 12th grade tests that they might want to testify to, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mark.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt this excellent discussion on these assessments, but they need us on the House floor for a quick quorum. And so we will be over and back in 10 minutes, if that would be okay.
Well,
Mr. Chair.
They're enforcing the button rule, so yes. That's good. Okay, we're recessed.
It's been a very enlightening experience for me, who's kind of still somewhat new to education, and just wanted to thank them for really bringing in all the experts. I think when you have a concept that's as broad-reaching as this, operationalizing it can be difficult, and I give the members a lot of credit for allowing us to be a part of those conversations and making sure that when this does get passed that it's actually going to work from an MDE perspective. One thing that remains in the House language that we do have a little bit of concern with that Representative Reinert had mentioned was the inclusion of the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery as a substitute for whatever state accountability exam would come out of the RFP process under this language. This originally came in the Education Policy Committee as an amendment, and at the time it seemed to make some sense conceptually, but when we brought it back to our staff, we realized that there were some problems, particularly with federal accountability on using using the ASVAB like that. So what I did was had, at the request of members, had Jennifer Dugan, our assessment director, contact the Department of Defense, department that works on this on the ASVAB, to ask them what the practicability would be of using the ASVAB as a state and federal accountability exam. So I will let her speak to that conversation.
Ms. Dugan.
Jennifer Dugan, Minnesota Department of Education, and I'm the director for the Division of Statewide Testing. Thank you.
You're a psychometrician as well.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
We have one here.
So I did talk with someone from the Department of Defense about using the ASFAB in this manner of statewide accountability and then also for student accountability as taking the assessment as part of graduation. And when asked if she was aware of any other states that were doing this, she said she was not aware of other states doing this, that when states contact the Department of Defense for using the ASFAB in this manner, they actively discourage states from using the ASFAB in this manner for accountability, that it is not designed as an academic assessment. It is a job. It is assessing job skills, and so it is not developed to assess academic standards, or, and so specifically, it would not be aligned to the Minnesota academic standards. Yes, and I spoke with someone from the Ascension Policy Group and Dr. Arabian. And so also another concern that she had, so she went through the psychometric implications of having an assessment that was not developed for a given purpose, serving a specific purpose. And of course, I was looking at it from the perspective of what we would then need to do in order to make the, supplement the assessment and make it align to our academic standards and meet state and federal requirements. So we were looking at it from different perspectives. But she also expressed concern about the Department of Defense's resources to administer the ASFAB. They don't have staff that would be able to go out to all of the schools in the state and administer the ASFAB, and that would be a requirement. Okay. And so I could go on with the list. Another piece that came up in the conversation was they track it, of course, by social security number, and they would not be able to use our statewide ID system, and so we would have a tracking problem with students that would be taking it to get their results back.
Okay, well, Ms. Dugan, thank you for that research. Perhaps an email to the conferees so that's available as we ultimately present whatever is adopted for persons that may inquire about that provision. Thank you very much. And we'll look at the potential assessment testing section draft on Monday. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think one other thing that I believe maybe wasn't mentioned, that, of course, the Armed Services do use that as a recruiting tool as well.
Yes. But thank you very much. And we have two remaining items for this part of the meeting. That would be for Integration and Achievement Program and for Charter Schools. A great deal of work's been done on the Integration Achievement, and we've had overviews already in terms of the side-by-sides. I'm going to ask Senator Torres Ray and Representative Mariani to highlight where we're at in discussions to bring this together, and this is another item where we hope on Monday we may have a proposal that we can look at. And of course, money is another part of the equation, but for language, that's what we'll talk about in terms of policy. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, indeed, you know, as you know, the distribution eligibility formula in House and Senate are different, so we'll have to figure out, you know, kind of how after the target you, we can make that decision. But we focused most of our conversation with Representative Mariani and the staff and the department on a couple of issues relating to the progress and an evaluation process. I think that there has been a significant effort in both houses to really incorporate language around capturing growth and progress and providing reports and requiring the longitudinal data process for the districts. And I think that our staff has been very diligent in trying to really define what that is. I think that they understand the essence of what we're trying to do as legislators, that we really want to measure student growth and progress and proficiency in several subjects. But what we have now is that we have several changes that have been made in legislation that incorporate kindergarten assessments, incorporate computer adaptive testing, it incorporates growth and progress, MCAs, and all of that is really not articulated well in the language we have. The language we have is just so broad. It just simply says measure progress and provide longitudinal data. And so we are still working on trying to make absolutely clear that for all grades, beginning kindergarten all the way to 12th grade, we want to measure progress and we want to measure growth, and we want to make it very clear. We also have some differences and some language that we're just going to have to take out related to the AYP language that is incorporated in legislation right now. And then we are also talking about specifically what will be appropriate to require from the departments in terms of reports. We have different language about the percentage. We are okay in terms of how the progress reports will be submitted to the department. Both houses have differences, in terms of what happens if the districts are not meeting, their goals. And we have a provision to cut funding for the districts. We are in agreement about the process of giving ample time to the districts to really put a plan in place, report to the department. What is not clear, I think, to both of us is if we cut funding, how do we help those districts actually achieve their plans in the future if they don't have the funding anymore? So we're trying to figure out at this point what is the best approach to pursue to support districts that are making progress and provide the incentives so that they continue to go, but also hold those districts that are not making progress accountable to the plan that they submitted to the department. So that's where we're at, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Torres-Ray. And I believe House members need to get back fairly soon, as I but as we mentioned, there continues to be work. I know you're going to be working on this tomorrow as well, and we hope to have something posted then for additional discussion on Monday. Representative Mariani, I know you'll be working on this over the weekend with her and others that are participating. For the charter schools, the same thing, and I'd like Representative Mariani to highlight where we're at on discussions there, and I know Mr. Piccolo and a number of others are involved in discussions there, and either by Monday or early in the week we'll have a chance, but I'd like you to be able to get something on the record too, but perhaps a 1 or 2 minute overview. Sure, and we'll hear from Mr. Piccolo. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll do this very, very, very quick, because obviously at some point we'll come back and we'll walk through section by section. But I think we've made very good progress in the last couple of days. Senator Torres-Ray and myself had a meeting with the department and also with Mr. Piccolo from MAX. A good chunk of the charter school language on the House side comes from the MAX proposal. Good chunks on both sides come from the department. But we've also had constant communication with charter school partners, MNCAN, a couple of other groups, I think Student First, and perhaps another group. So there's a lot of information flowing. But the point is that as we walk through very carefully the provisions, we've identified lots of agreement. And then we've identified 4 or 5 areas where there's ongoing conversations that are happening with the principals and with the department. This one's really kind of unusual because we really have the department heavily at the table with us on this. So I think, I hope when we come back, except for maybe 1 or 2 points, we'll have a proposal, if you will, before us that has already passed muster with the 3 entities. So I'm feeling pretty good where we're at.
Thank you, Representative Mariani, and each of the testifiers could identify themselves for the record. And
my name is Brian Sweeney, and I'm with Charter School Partners. And we are a 4-year-old nonprofit organization, Charter Support Group. to support high-performing charter schools, particularly in the inner city. Chair Marquardt once asked, can't we get along regarding the charter community come to the table and agree on issues? I come from a family of 10 kids with 9 boys, and we never got along, but the end of the dinner was had some great resolution. We agree on 90%, 85% of the issues. There are a couple of areas of concern that we have. We have introduced a charter accountability bill that we're still working through some language and some concepts, and we hope to continue to talk about that. So.
Thank you, Ms. Sweeney. And Mr. Piccolo.
Mr. Chair, members, Eugene Piccolo, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. We've had conversations in the last day with the department on a couple areas and have come to agreement even yesterday afternoon on some more language. And there are two big areas that are still outstanding from our perspective in terms of the differences between the House and Senate bill. And those relate to lease aid provisions in the Senate bill. And we've had conversations with the department and are continuing those discussions and trying to work up some language to address those issues.
Okay. And we know there's others that are working as well. I see Senator Saltzman, former senator, and but we'll note that next week we hope to have something that we will have something next week that we can further review and go through in detail. But we commend all the various parties for reaching out to try to resolve this amicably. Thank you. And Chair Marquardt, I know you're going to be going back. We're going to recess, and as we also are in session, but perhaps any guidance regarding the weekend?
So, well, thank you very much, Senator Wieger. Just stay close to your computers all. I mean, it'd still be great to get targets if that would happen, but I know a lot of work is going to be happening this weekend among various articles of the bill, but I guess just people keep posted, and we'll update you from time to time.
And we will. There's one item. When we did the side-by-sides, there was a series of items that were agreed to. It was in the context that there was no controversy. I believe there was one, Article 5, Section 26, and if I could, I mentioned it to Representative Marquardt. Without getting into detail, you know, there is, you know, some discussion that people would like to have, and so Senator Johnson moves that Article 5, Section 26 be
reconsidered or whatever.
For those persons concerned on that, we'll take care of that when we have a quorum on the House side, but you know, we wanted to make sure that for those that had some wording issues that they'd have a chance to discuss that, so just a heads up. For Monday, looking ahead with the possibility that we may be meeting later today, it depends on the progress in each of our bodies. We're looking at teacher licensure and at the Board of Teachings here, and we've obviously we have proposals addressing that. Hopefully we'll have something on testing available as discussed. We have several task forces that are recommended in the bills and would like to just have something showing all of those. We'll discuss the merits of each of those. If there's something ready for on integration, as we think there will be through the work this weekend, we'll go through that. And possibly others as well. And as Representative Marquardt, you mentioned, we're waiting for targets. That'll help for a lot of the other provisions to come together as well. So thank you, Representative Marquardt, members, and we're recessed.